What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that thinks World Book Day is an event for card-happy refs. Coming up, the Championship, even by its own standards, this is a special kind of madness. Coleman & Monk, what a lovely name for an artisanal cheese. And we finally talk about Blackburn, powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Well, hello again. Sorry for shuffling around the day we released the pod again once more, but we wanted to be across all the midweek madness. It's me, Matt. I'm joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. How are you doing, chaps?
Hello. Yeah, hello. Not too bad. Not too bad. What did your son go as for World Book Day?
He went as a tiger. From the tiger who came to tea, and my wife had to field questions about that this morning at the bus stop and realised she hadn't actually read it. So he had a tiger onesie and that's what he could get into, basically. So how about yours?
Yeah, Evie's bad panda and very good costume, to be fair. And Ted, he's gone route one because he's got a book on Haaland. So he's gone in the full Haaland kit, but he's got blonde hair and it's just about long enough to get that little top knot. So he actually looked like Haaland. And apparently in the playground, everyone was pointing at him saying, look, there's Haaland. There's Haaland. There you go. He'll be happy.
I went as Stuart Pearce to a fancy dress competition once and didn't place because it was in Wales. So nobody knew who it was. Sam, I think you're a couple of years away from this, but yeah.
No, mate. Let me get involved. Okay. Billy's gone as Stickman. Stickman pajamas, and Louise has made him something which I think has got rosemary coming out at the end of it, which he was trying to poke into various holes in the car this morning, which was much appreciated by, so much appreciated by me that I hit my wing mirror on something as I was trying to control him. And Sid, we've got a book called, well, the front says, When I Grow Up, I Want to Play for AFC Bournemouth, because that's where he's...
Yeah, we got that one for Forrest. Got that one.
That's where his grandparents reside. So he's gone in the QPR away kit, which is red and black hoops. He's gone with a... boot bag, he's got goalie gloves, and he's got a yellow and a red card.
Magnificent. I found a stick in our garden today. It looks exactly like Stickman. I've saved it for when my son gets home from school. Hey, listener, come back. We are going to talk about football, honestly. Any second now. First of all, though, let me remind you of the deal from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, first up today, midweek action. Well, what a situation we've got unfolding in the Championship. Whether you're looking at the top of the table or the bottom of the table, it is tight. Wins for Leicester, Ipswich and Leeds, which we'll talk about in a second at the top, but at the bottom, I mean, it's not even really the bottom, is it? Even Watford on 45 points are only 7 from the drop zone and they're in 13th position. So throw a blanket over that lot. Any three of them will go down. We'll find out. Might not be QPR, Sam. You're at Loftus Road on Wednesday night for the 2-2 draw with West Brom. You can tell us about the game in a minute, but first of all, that was a very lovely tribute to Stan Bowles that they paid before kickoff.
Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, it was quite an emotional evening. I did feel quite emotional actually at the end of all the tributes. Looked really good in the Stan Bowles stand as well, the mural or whatever you call it. And my goodness me, they got a performance that he would have been proud of, and I'm sure all his family really enjoyed. There was some really individual brilliance as well from some of the QPR players, which is what Stan Bowles was all about. And I'm not sure if it was directly him or if it was Rodney Marsh, but big reason that I support the club, you know, my dad's heroes really. So it was a sad night, but I thought the atmosphere hasn't been great at times over the last few seasons. I've probably said that a lot. It was amazing last night. So the perfect send off almost. It would have been nice to have got the winning goal.
Is a draw a fair result?
Absolutely not. No, it's one of the most one-sided games I've seen this season without my blue and white hooped spectacles on. West Brom do what they do, I suppose, going forward. I think that's 4 shots on target in the last 2 games and they scored 4 goals. So incredibly clinical, but I have not seen, I mean, me and Clarkie are massive fans of Corbran and I've spoke about them without the ball so often. I've not seen a team cause West Bromwich Albion that many problems all season, for a season or two. Had over 20 shots. We had a missed penalty, a disallowed goal, 100% a red card and a goal for Kipre's wonderful save. I mean, there was everything. If QPR had got a point out of that game, West Brom hardly had an attack in the second half. It would have been so unjust. So no, it was a brilliant performance from QPR. One that, you know, even though they haven't won the game, they have to take optimism for the remainder of the season. And I don't know if West Brom had just been affected a little bit by that lack of a striker. I know it's a constant topic, really, but I just felt that they didn't really have many opportunities to hurt QPR last night. But they'll come again. They're too good or not. And their fixtures are really nice as well. Clarkie, having had a look at them, I mean, I think West Brom play six of the bottom seven, maybe including last night. They're going to get in the playoffs and they're going to be tough to beat.
Tell me about Marty Cifuentes then, like what he's done differently and who is the star of the show? Obviously, Sam Field got himself a brace, but who shone brightest?
It's funny because I was working for Five Live last night and I said before the game, I'm expecting it to be cagey, blah, blah, blah. And then at halftime, I just covered my back and I went, it's so weird because QPR 2-1 behind, it's been three goals, but it's been quite cagey, honestly. It was so tactical the first 15, 20 minutes. And I think because we had two coaches that are just really, really good, they both teams built up in a back three. Both of them had unorthodox fullbacks last night. Adam Reach played left back for West Brom. Alex Mowat was dropping into the left-sided centre-half position and getting on the ball, and Reach was pushing really high up. QPR had Jimmy Dunn at right back, who got badly exposed for the Johnston goal for West Brom. His kind of signature move now, coming in field and hitting shots. But Jimmy Dunn, QPR building a three. Pole goes really high on the left-hand side. I think there's definite tactical adjustments, Clarkey, but I think the biggest thing is players that looked like they were miles away from the standard at the start of the season all of a sudden seem to have ridiculous amounts of belief. Dunn being one, I think Dyke's another. Field last night, I've been so critical of the midfield players at QPR for so long. I mean, he had four or five chances getting in the box, wanting to run forward and play forward. And also, you've got to say, just reigniting Ilias Chair and Chris Willock and wanting them to play for the shirt. So, and the addition of new players. Anderson's a really good player, the number 10. Technically really efficient. Doesn't really go past anyone, but really assured on the ball and reliable on the ball. So there's a few of the ingredients. But you can just see the improvement. You can see the improvement in the confidence. And I expect them to kick on now. I mean, if they get relegated this season with what they're churning out at the moment, them or Sheffield Wednesday, how unfortunate is that going to be when you consider some of the teams that are in free fall?
Yeah, somebody big's going to drop, that's for sure. They're a point above the relegation zone as it stands. You mentioned Ilias Chair, Sam. I'm surprised slash amazed that he's still playing for QPR. If you missed this, he's been sentenced to a year in prison with another year suspended in Belgium. He and his brother accused of assaulting a truck driver with a rock that left him with serious injuries, including a broken skull. This was after an altercation during a kayaking expedition in Belgium and France in 2020. He's going to appeal against the verdict, so he remains available for selection. QPR said the club are and have been in regular contact with Ilias Chair's legal team regarding a charge of assault which has been made against him. The legal proceeding is yet to reach its conclusion. As such, the club will be making no further comment. Read into that what you will, but it's a very, very strange situation. Let's turn to Tuesday. Ipswich involved in another Portman Road Classic. Didn't look that way at half time. It was 0-0 against Bristol City. In the second half, both sides let it all hang out. Five goals, a missed pen, and a late winner to mean McKenna's men sit second in the standings. Adrian, one of the popular phrases in football at the moment is mentality monsters. That's got to be Ipswich, right? 1-0 down, 2-1 down, missed a late pen, went and won it anyway.
Yeah, they've got good character, haven't they? They've just got unbelievable belief. I've said before, it reminds me of Arsenal's season last year, where they got themselves into a lot of scrapes and found their way out of it for the most part. You know, digging in, some dramatic moments, some great games. It must be a joy to play for them at the moment. Again, it's the subs. It's always the subs that seem to be making the difference for Ipswich. Obviously, it's the Leif Davis show in a way because he gets two assists and a goal, but the game really turned when Burns, Sarmiento, Taylor and Al Hamadi came on, all massively influential in the game. And Yeah, that's been the story of Ipswich, hasn't it? They're able to make multiple subs that can just change things at the drop of a hat. I think, yeah, it was impressive the way they come back because they weren't playing very well. I think Bristol City had nullified them very nicely for an hour or so, very compact down the middle. And then all of a sudden, you've got Burns flying at the left back, Cam Pring, who we like on this show, but I think he had a tough time. McCrory on the other side as well. So yeah, it was terrific. Terrific night, I guess, for Ipswich Town, and it keeps them right in the mix, doesn't it? It's they're the most exciting team to follow in the Championship, aren't they, this season?
There's been two penalties this week when the player was stepping back to size up the opportunity. I knew they were going to miss. Three last night for QPR, El Hamadi, and I haven't had an opportunity to do it because I've not had the time. Didn't he go for a hellish run at Wimbledon where he was missing penalty after penalty, so much so that Reeves is now on them? I'm sure he missed 3 out of 3 or 4 out of 4. So why a player going to a new club trying to establish himself, massive moment like that, thought that was the opportune moment to put his hand up? I don't really know. I knew he was going to miss it. He's not a penalty taker. I've gone big there because I've not gone back over the archive.
But... Well, he has scored one for them already, which is probably why he took this one. He scored didn't he?
Sorry,
different environment, though.
Yeah, I knew he did that. Sorry. I heard that in the commentary the other night. I hadn't seen it. But if you're a striker and you're a good goal scorer, it doesn't necessarily mean you're a good penalty taker.
No.
That's talking from experience here. I was an awful penalty taker, and I like to think I was a pretty good finisher at stages in my career. So I think he may have to pass over responsibility.
Yeah. Bristol City, 4 losses in a row. I don't think they're going to get dragged in. I know it's only 6 points, but I still think there are positives to come out of this performance. They just had a little bit of a panic up towards the end of the game. It was the Alamo and they didn't manage the game properly, but I still think they're going to be fine, Bristol City.
Shows you what this Championship is like, because my note on Bristol City was, are they officially out of the playoff running? So I think we'll say yes, they are. They might be in relegation trouble.
No, they're not getting playoffs, no.
As for Kieran McKenna, I reckon he's looking at Vincent Kompany and thinking, maybe I'll bail out whether we go up or not, because Kompany's gone from being linked with the Spurs job to totally flopping in the Premier League. So that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Leicester went into Tuesday's trip to Sunderland off the back of 3 successive defeats in the league, unfathomable a few weeks ago. Victory at the Stadium of Light, therefore, came straight out of the category marked much needed. They were lucky at the end. Sam Hamza Chowdhury probably should have conceded a penalty, but other than that, a relatively fuss-free victory, which is what they were looking for, because they've got a fairly tricky run in Leicester, haven't they? They've still got to go to Hull, Bristol City, Millwall, Plymouth, Preston, teams either fighting for something or with decent home records. Got that game against Southampton, Norwich, West Brom, still to come to the KP. So from looking like it was sewn up, it's far from.
Yeah, QPR was the game where I'd kind of earmarked they need to get 3 points because it was going to get tricky from that moment on, or trickier. So navigate this one's really good. I'm getting a little bit irked by it. I'm getting a little bit annoyed by just Leicester supporters losing the plot a little bit. I mean, I still think they're amazing at Leeds. I thought they played so well at Leeds. I'd lay back there on the sofa watching that game and I was like, you know, this is a... And I think Clarke, he preempted it and said he feels they're going to show their strength in that fixture. And despite the defeat, I thought they really did. I just think circumstantially, they've been affected by big players missing, never really been able to have everyone fit in the last few weeks. And if they had that, they'd be steamrolling teams still. I think there's a bit of a lack of creativity maybe at the moment. There's not a striker that's sticking his hand up and saying, I should be playing for 80 minutes, 90 minutes every game. And that was probably evident here after a really good start. Could have been 2 or 3 goals up. Had to settle for the one. Probably fortunate they're playing against a side that are at a low ebb. Went a bit more defensive, it looks, Sunderland, with a back five. Shuffled it in the second half and obviously finished the stronger, but woefully out of form in front of goal. And so much so, I was, you know, the striker, Hemir, who we spoke up in the summer, I don't think he's played since August started, and he's come back in for the last two. So it's just a roll of the dice at the top end of the pitch, and whatever they do is not paying off. But yeah, massive win for Leicester, and another big one to come at the weekend.
Just a quick one on for XG fans out there. There are some. It's the eighth time since Boxing Day at Sunderland have registered an XG below one in a championship game. You know, that's since Boxing Day, basically almost all the games. But yeah, if Jack Clark's not playing, which he wasn't the other day, you're looking around and you're thinking, well, where are they going to create the clear-cut chances? Because they outshot Leicester 17-10, put them under all sorts of pressure, but really didn't carve out much. Chris Rigg, I think, Sean, obviously still only 16. He's going to be a player. It was his first start in the Championship for Sunderland, and he caused Leicester a few problems. But I think Leicester are delighted to get away with a three-pointer there, because in the second half, that they went into retreat mode. And I think that's what happens when you've lost three on the spin.
Leeds, though, continue to impress, particularly at Elland Road. They edge past Stoke. Dan James got the only goal. Nice bit of skill, helpful deflection on it too. Ben Pearson sent off late on for Stoke. I think we've kind of said what we need to say, Clarkey, about Leeds in recent weeks. And this was, you know, just another routine win for them. So what about Stoke? Mm. Goodness me, they're in the relegation zone, only on goal difference. But it wasn't supposed to be this way when Stephen Schumacher came in.
It wasn't. And I saw, I think, two of their first three matches, and it was a big improvement. There was a good energy to them. They were pressing. They looked like a team that were capable of getting results. And all that you could really level at them was that, oh, you look a bit light up front. Where are the goals coming from? And that has continued to be the case for Stoke. But they've worryingly almost got backtracked, or they've deteriorated when it comes to the energy, the pressing, etc. Because results have been bad, Schumacher's had to sort of shuffle the pack a lot. And, you know, maybe he's found a team now. Million Manhoff, which is a great name, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Million Manhoff. I know you like a good name, Matt. Dutch kid on the right wing. Had a really good game here. I think he's been in the team lately. Ennis up front, Bay on the left. And then the midfield of Berger, Baker and Laurent is pretty solid, actually. It's got a bit of experience in there. So that front six looks better. And if they play like they did at Elland Road, I think the feeling is that Stoke will get enough points to survive, but it's goals. That's the big issue for them. I don't think Schumacher had enough backing really in January. Maybe they didn't have the funds, but I expected them to be a bit more ambitious in bringing in forward players, you know, players that would almost guarantee goals, but hasn't happened. But yeah, so this is credit in defeat, but defeat doesn't really get them anywhere, does it?
Nope. Let Berger and Baker cook in midfield. That'd be my advice. Right, Sam, let's talk about your second favourite manager in the Championship, because his side, Sheffield Wednesday, having a right old hoot just now. Four wins on the spin. They beat Plymouth by a goal to nil at Hillsborough on Tuesday. Danny Roll can do no wrong at the moment. Nor Ike Ogbo didn't score, but he did provide the assist for Gassama here. Like you alluded to, I mean, if they go down, it will not be for the want of trying to stay up.
No, I think there's a strong kind of sentiment, if that's the right word, case that QPR and Sheffield Wednesday could be where Rotherham are if they hadn't changed managers. It was such a mess, obviously, at both those clubs. And we've seen the majority, if not all, pretty much the teams in the lower reaches of the division change at some stage. QPR and Sheffield Wednesday have done it early enough to have probably that immediate boost, then a little bit of a plateau. And now that the messages and the tactics and the improvement in the players is all coming to the fore. And I think that goes for both clubs. QPR certainly had a dip after the initial first few weeks, and Sheffield Wednesday, and they suffered a 4-0 defeat at Huddersfield not too long ago. So there's been bumps in the road, but the improvement is vast. They move the ball quickly. They play with a tempo. And in terms of the signings that QPR made, you know, Sheffield Wednesday's two, you could argue, Ogbo and Poveda have been standout above anything that anyone else has maybe done. Those two are exceptional at the moment. Sheffield Wednesday fans loving it. Young goalkeeper as well, Beadle. I think that's four clean sheets in six. Got to remember, only one of these recent defeats in this brilliant run, the one defeat, sorry, was against Leicester. So it's five wins in six, one defeat against the team that are probably going to win the title still. So brilliant run, and I didn't think they were too troubled about Too Troubled by Argyle. More about them later.
Here's a stat for you. Okay, across the last 12 matches, Sheffield Wednesday have accrued the same number of points as Leicester City. I mean, you know, they're in promotion form. I think they've won 7 of 12. You know, I think they're joint fourth in the form table over 12 games. So, you know, had this been at the start of the season, you'd be talking about a side that might be going up. So it's been ridiculous, really, this run. And yeah, neither of them or QPR are playing anywhere near badly enough to go down. I think they've got that momentum at the right time.
So they don't want to go to League One. That's where Barnsley and Bolton are trying to get out of at the moment. They shared the goals and the points in a 2-2 at Oakwell. This after Bolton fought from 2-0 down, scored a 98th minute equaliser when Randall Williams followed up Josh Sheehan's save penalty, I should say. John McAtee had nearly broken his neck with a botched backflip, which reminded me, and maybe you, listener, of Brock Lesnar's attempt at WrestleMania 19. Galling this one, Clarkey, for Barnsley, because they would have been level on points with Bolton had they held on.
Yeah, they're ruining it, aren't they? No doubt about it. They're just a bogey team, aren't they? They're seconds away from beating Bolton in the league for the first time in 17 attempts, a run going back to 1997. And then they concede deep into injury time with a rebound from a penalty. So yeah, they must feel pretty cursed against Bolton. Yeah, it was the battle of the 3-1-4-2s, which seems to be a very popular formation, particularly in League One actually this season, and both of them do it really well. Got to say, in this game, I do like the look of the Barnsley midfield. Luke O'Connell, we've talked about before, he's at the base with Herbie Kane and Phillips just in front. That's really solid. And they got themselves into a lead, but through pressing, basically, with Bolton sort of playing out from the back. We know that Barnsley would tear into you. They get a couple of goals that way. But then they sort of retreat, don't they? And they relied on their keeper, really, Liam Roberts, to stay in the game as Bolton launched a sort of attack after attack. Really good comeback from them. And what was interesting from Bolton's point of view was that we know that they love to play out from the back. They're sort of ultra footballing side, but from half time onwards, there's none of that. Keeper was booming it. It was like, we've got to miss out this press, which I think is a good game management from the manager. So yeah, probably a fair result on reflection. Great second half from Bolton, superb first half from Barnsley, and look, they're both right in the mix, aren't they? It's a great race. What a race at the top of League One. I can't really call it.
Only won 3 of 10, Bolton. This is, and I think two of those victories were against Cambridge, I said on last week's podcast. Yeah. So this is a bit of a stumble for them. Just on the front players, I think a transfer that completely passed me by, Aaron Collins, going to Bolton. So probably because he's been relatively quiet. I think he scored last time out and he got assists for Adebayo against his former club in this one. But it just looked like great fun, didn't it? I was following it on Sky and it sounded like Bolton were laying absolute siege to Barnsley's goal, hence why Roberts had to make 7 saves, I think. And with Deon Charles being out, and I know he wasn't particularly in form, I'm not sure what's exactly happened to him there. I think he scored 2 in his last 13 prior to obviously missing some games now. So they need to get those forward players to click. I think that was probably to their detriment at the back end of last season when they were kind of heavy loaded and none of the guys really did the business. So I think that's definitely an issue at the moment, getting that chemistry and getting those goals flowing between the likes of Jerome Adebayo and the aforementioned Collins.
What about League Two, Sam? Are Mansfield going to break our hearts again, beaten by MK Dons in midweek? Probably doesn't make MK Dons feel any better about what happened to them at the weekend. Yeah, 11 shots on target, only one goal. Not pretty reading for Nigel Clough. One of those things, he doesn't seem that bothered by it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, good opponent, I would say. Nice to see Jordan Bowery back at fullback. I'd missed him having a centre forward in one of the fullback positions. He's been far too sensible the last few weeks. Yeah, I think I read Nigel Clough's interview this morning. He said, you know, probably the best footballing side in the division, and they do move it really well. MK Dons, uncharacteristically off colour at Wimbledon the other day, weren't they? I mean, I think Wimbledon closed down their system brilliantly. What I mean, you know, by going slightly different way, and it really worked for them. I don't think Mansfield have maybe got that in their armory, especially at at home, where they've obviously scored, what, 14 goals in the previous two games. So they're going to go for it. I think they just got picked off a little bit by what looked like a stand-up performance from Alex Gilby, who had about four or five chances in the extended highlights that I saw, getting forward, getting in the attacking groove. So, no, I would imagine Mansfield aren't going to go anywhere, but I'd expect MK Dons to finish really strong and either get one of those automatic positions or go into the playoffs probably as favourites.
Five points between the top five for the title. Basically, it's a shootout for the title in League Two. And MK Dons, despite really never being in the top three this season, it doesn't feel like they've been in the top three.
Maybe after the first game when they won at Wrexham, and we thought like their front two were like, Shearer and Sutton.
Yeah, look, they look the real deal, don't they? I think Tomlinson's having a real good run of form at left wing back. A couple of assists for him in this game. But yeah, that box midfield, I really like it. As Lewis Bate, you'll know about him from Chelsea. I think he had maybe his best game, breaking up play, keeping things ticking over. Him, Jack Payne, Alex Gilby, who was brilliant, Dan Kemp. That's a really good four.
Average height of 5'4".
Yeah, that's a really good footballing. I'm just looking at him and I think I wouldn't want to play keep, but I wouldn't want to be in the middle of a
Kemp was at Chelsea as well. Kemp was at Chelsea because I remember watching him in John Harley's team at like about under 14, under 15. Yeah. And he has actually shot up a little bit because he was like particularly diminutive when he was a young lad. But no, he's an incredible player.
I bet they look amazing in the warm-up. I often watch the warm-ups when I'm at games and you see the keeper and you think, oh, I wish I was down there. You know, years ago, I would have been good enough to be part of that, you know, and you look at it, it's so sharp. But yeah, those four players in particular, probably not League Two players, really. They sort of almost technically, they should probably be at a higher level.
Yeah, as you say, Clark, it's going to be interesting to see who does get the title. All three divisions delivering the goods again this season. All right, next, we'll talk about some hirings and firings. Accrington Stanley have decided that Coleman's not mustard, whilst Cambridge are finally welcoming a monk to the Abbey. Let's start with Stanley first. John Coleman, he and his assistant Jimmy Bell ditched after Saturday's thumping by Wrexham. So Andy Holt fires them and then deactivates his Twitter account. There is a very long and rambly statement from him on Accrington's website this morning. I'll just read you the top line from it, or point A, as he has called it. He goes down to point G and then carries on and on and on and on. But point A, last year, the recruitment of players was dreadful. Many performances were very poor. Injuries were many. We were relegated from League One during the season. Jimmy often complained too many players were being engaged with not enough quality. This is always going to happen, wasn't it, Adrian? It's a strange statement from Andy Holt, though, who is making some reasonable points about the amount of money that he's put in and how it should be his decision, which is obviously right. He's also saying that he informed them of the decision to sack them via WhatsApp, which doesn't feel like a great look. All's not well, is it?
No. Obviously, they've fallen out big time. It sounds like Jimmy Bell, in particular, reading that statement, is not in Andy Holt's good books. He talked about him being on the phone during a meeting to someone else on the board, saying that if we have the same team that got relegated, we'll go down again, you know. So it sounds very weird, and they've obviously had a big fallout. But it's tough to sack guys that have done so well for you, isn't it, over the years? And they, you know, they are club legends as a pair. And yeah, maybe that's why Andy Holt feels he has to justify it and tell everybody the story, warts and all, because otherwise, you know, there might be a little bit of sadness around losing them, I guess. So, but yeah, look, they're not going to go down. They're not going to go up. They clearly don't get on anymore. Just make the change now and come up with something new. It's not that attractive a job, I've got to say, for anyone, because Holt himself has said that he's not going to fund losses beyond this season. So it's going to be a really tight budget, and he might even walk away if he can find a buyer. So yeah, you're going to have to get probably a rookie manager to take this on and back themselves to improve, you know, what's been fairly mediocre fortunes. So yeah, interesting and pretty dire times, I'd say, at Accrington Stanley.
Yeah, spoiler, get a rookie manager, get to, let's say, November, and then reappoint John Coleman for a third spell. That's how I see this one going. This one surprised me, Sam. Gary Monk has got the Cambridge gig, citing the stability in the ownership and their thought process as the reason he was keen for it. Were you surprised? I mean, it's his first managerial role since he was let go by Sheffield Wednesday in November 2020. It's a long time out of the game.
Really surprised, yeah. At the, yeah, maybe the, I mean, Clarke knows the club better than me, but yeah, it's a small club, isn't it? Cambridge. And he's a relatively still probably quite a big name, considering the clubs that he's managed, albeit he's been off, I don't know what he's been doing. Finding himself, exploring Asia, probably doing a lot of trawling around training grounds and maybe learning, that type of thing is probably what I envisage he's been getting up to. I really like him, actually, Gary Monk. Every time I've played against him, always found him a really affable fella. And since he became a manager as well, always had a word or two with him, really like him. It's a tough job that he's inherited. I mean, they've not scored in the last three games since Neil Harris has left. The cushion is only 4 points, I think. So he's still got quite a bit of work to do. But I think, I was trying to think, historically quite... despite being such a good player and playing in that brilliant Swansea side, quite a defensively minded manager, if memory serves me right. Kind of looks to solidify and be maybe get a big man up there. And they've got plenty of attacking players, plenty of experienced players, Cambridge. So I think his skill set will probably suit what he's inheriting there. But yeah, absolutely surprised. And you know why I'm a fan of Gary Monk, because I once came out of a Vegas nightclub with a current EFL manager who people won't have trouble guessing who that was. We came out of a nightclub, sat on a blackjack table, and there was Gary Monk on the end of it at 5 a.m. Hugh winning big hands, and the three of us having pylons in the casino carpet.
All right, we'll have a look ahead to some of the weekend's games not involving Cambridge next. But we are going from Gary Monk's current club to one of his formers. Birmingham visit Millwall on Saturday. That was a vital point, Clarkie, that Lukas Jukovic nicked for the Blues at Hull in midweek. Looks like they're missing Tony Mowbray, though.
Yeah, it does. It does. They're in trouble. There's no doubt about it. And the fans, because I was at the game against Southampton, what a game that was. And there was a feeling of sort of desolation, really, at the end, that they lost the game and that they were so close, only out of the bottom three on goal difference at that point. So, yeah, they're worried, no doubt about it. They've had some bad luck. I mean, the red card for me at the weekend, Sanderson, against Southampton, was never a red. Yeah, they appealed it and they did, you know, they lost the appeal, weirdly. And then, of course, they conceded a handball goal at Hull City in midweek. So there's a real feeling of unjustness around the place at the moment. For me, Stansfield's got to start. He didn't start Hull, which I found really weird. Tyler Roberts played up front. I mean, he's head and shoulders their best out there at the top of the pitch. I really like him. Someone that I was with on the weekend said he reminded us of Jamie Vardy. And I kind of get that because he's so wiry and he's skinny and he'll run all day long. He's pretty quick and he's a good finisher. And I think that's a good comparison. So he's got to come back into the team. For me, Miyoshi as well has got to come in. Paik, the South Korean player, I've been impressed with him. So yeah, I think there'll be changes for the Millwall game, even though it's a good result at Hull. There's a little bit of rotation there from Mark Venus. And I think there's decent competition for places all around the pitch, except at centre-half, where it's a nightmare. They're not good at centre-half, Birmingham, at the moment. Sanderson's obviously out suspended. Awu, I'm not sure about at all. Buchanan, I think, deputised it the other night at centre-half. So, yeah, Millwall strikers will definitely eye up the Birmingham centre-backs and think, right, this is where we can really get at them. But the rest of the side, for me, Birmingham is more mid-table fare than relegation trouble.
If Millwall had some strikers, probably, it would be. So they haven't got any. Obviously, Obafemi came on the other day and got his first goal for the club, which there was so much kind of hope attached to that signing. So maybe that is going to be relevant now to their chance of staying in the division. But yeah, I didn't realise Bradshaw's out for the season and Nisbet, I think, is missing as well, short term as well. So it's really difficult for Neil Harris to cause a threat, I think, on the opponent's goal, especially when you consider what he's been historically as a manager. You know, he's going to be about clean sheets, especially in the next few weeks with what he's got to play with. And that's the only way they're going to get over the line, I think. They're not going to score an abundance of goals. So I believe this game's going to be incredibly tight. It could be one goal either way. Donore, the midfield player who all the Millwall fans have told me is the one who can handle the ball and he can be creative. I think he's got to come back in to try and give them a little bit of that creativity in the midfield. That certainly wasn't evident at Blackburn or in that Watford victory as well. So I'd fancy them over Birmingham, but I mean, this is going to be low scoring. It's going to be tense, and I think there's probably going to be a lot of defenders behind the ball making last-ditch challenges and defending their boxes with their lives.
Mm. They're not that defensive, Birmingham, by the way. They're quite front foot.
Mm.
So they might take the fight to Millwall in a way. I sat next to someone who probably would be playing centre-half. I was in the director's box, by the way, at St Andrews, as you are. I don't know why. I don't know how we got in there. Sat next to Christian Bielik. Zero banter.
That was worse than Jasper Carrot, which was my guess.
Yeah, I guess. Christian Bielik. No chat whatsoever. Just spoke in Polish to his mates. But I think Birmingham would be all right, but I'm worried about them at the back.
Well, we shall see. Low scoring game predicted there. Maybe the same in the next one we're going to look at. A big hello to listener SoJD, who is kind enough to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to do the same, we'd appreciate it. They did point out, though, that there's not nearly enough Blackburn content on the pod. So we'll remedy that now, although I'm not sure that Blackburn fans will forgive us, Adrian. 1-1 draw against Millwall on Tuesday, but they're only 2 points outside the relegation zone. So how have they gone from playoff hopefuls to relegation candidates?
Yeah, 2 wins in 18 championship games. That's how. 9 points in the last 12, which is definitely bottom three form. So yeah, Blackburn are not in a good place at the moment. Obviously, John Eustace has come in. He's tried to change the style a bit. He's gone with that 3-4-2-1. And it's not brought about a victory yet, not officially in a game. He's lost twice and drawn the other four. I think in midfield, central midfield is a bit of an issue. They're missing the quality of Adam Wharton, who obviously went to Crystal Palace, walked straight into their first team. I've had a look at the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 championship matches, different central midfield combo in all of them. Buckley Garrett, Buckley Moran, Buckley Tronstad, Garrett Tronstad, Fleck Tronstad, Rankin Costello Tronstad. So that tells you that he's not sure what to do in the middle of the pitch. Without Smodic's goals, they probably would be in the bottom three, wouldn't they? He's doing a little bit of a Brereton Diaz sort of coming from nowhere to have an all-time season. I think there's a lot of inexperience in the Blackburn team. Some good, neat and tidy footballers, but maybe they lack a bit of cutting edge. If Smodic isn't on his A game, who else is going to step up and deliver consistently? I guess that's the message. The rear guard looks a bit Coventry with McFadzean and Higham in there. But they're leaking less goals now under Eustace. And this is, for me, this is an absolute must win for Blackburn. They have to beat Plymouth at home. Plymouth, not great travellers. They've got some tough games on the horizon. I think I read they've got the second toughest run in of the entire bottom half, sort of based on points per game so far. So this is huge, absolutely massive for Blackburn Rovers. If they don't win, if they lose the game, they could be the ones to go.
Well, Plymouth have lost 4 of 5, Sam, and failed to score in all of those defeats. But they have won at Middlesbrough recently, so I guess you don't know which Argyle are going to turn up.
Yeah, no, I did factor that into kind of my thought process, and Swansea as well. They won it relatively recently as well, if memory serves. So, I mean, it is a worry, the lack of goals. It has to be, because I felt from about the moment Schumacher walked out on them that Hardy and Whittaker would be enough to keep them in the division. Well, if they're not creating chances for those two and nobody else is capable of popping up with one, I don't know how they're going to get out of this rut that they're currently in. I think he's starting to get Ian Foster quite a lot of criticism, which I can understand, but when you lose, you know, Azaz and Kundal, two of those creative players, it's going to be difficult. I think it's difficult for the players anyway, having lost Steven Schumacher when they knew exactly what they were going to churn out week after week, the way they were going to approach games, be front-footed, try and outscore the opponent on all occasions. That's not really evident with Argyle at the moment. They're a little bit more pragmatic, I would suggest, relying on those two to get them out of trouble, and it's not really happening. On the flip side, you could say if he had a hand in the recruitment, they've gone really youthful with the players they brought in. They lack that experience maybe in this type of predicament. Alfie Devine was the only real forward creative player that they brought in, someone who, you know, has not played a great deal of football in the EFL despite his potential. So there's definitely been probably problems made there in the January window. But how they turn this around, I don't know. The saving grace, a bit like Clark, he was saying there, or to flip Blackburn's predicament, Argyle have got 6 games now against teams in the bottom half, I think. So the games are favourable at that. They play Leicester and Hull City at home. Other than that, the fixture list isn't too much to get worried about. So we'll see here, but I completely agree. I mean, these two are the ones looking the most likely, aren't they, currently from the, you know, if you take the bottom three out of it, the bottom three being Rotherham, Sheffield Wednesday, QPR, as it's been for long periods of the season. If you take them out of it, I think these two right now are the most likely to get sucked in above the others.
We shall see. Doesn't look good for Rotherham, though, that's for sure. In League One.
They're gone, mate.
Okay, all right.
They're Romeo.
Official. In League One, there is a bit. Yes, Adrian?
It's someone at the front door, that's all.
Okay. Well, and you might be able to hear my cleaners just getting busy to work as well. But look, this is real life. This is how we do. In League One, big game affecting both ends of the table at the Kassam Stadium. Oxford entertained Cheltenham. Sam, I looked at the table and saw that Oxford are a place and 3 points outside the playoffs. How on earth is that the case when they only won one of their last 10 games?
I know this is really not helpful, but I saw the comparison between Oxford when Des Buckingham took over and Portsmouth, you know, what they've done in that time. And I think they were like neck and neck, or Oxford were possibly even in front. And this is obviously in the lead up to the meeting last weekend. So they've just gone in opposite directions, basically. Yeah, I think they played really well at Portsmouth by all accounts. I think this is kind of the supporters rubbing their hands together. Oh, this is what we were supposed to be getting, but it's just not happened really for them over his tenure so far. I think they're 17th in the form table over the last 12 matches, not 1-4. So, you know, this is a game that they really have to win, I think, against Cheltenham. And the supporters aren't overly enamoured with what's been churned out. I think a bit too slow, a bit too pedestrian. You saw probably a really good comparison in the way that Liam Manning was setting up his Oxford side with the way Bristol City played the other night at Ipswich. It's direct in terms of the attacking intent. There's pace about them. They love playing in transition. It's been all a little bit slow under Des Buckingham at Oxford. But I've still got a great opportunity against Cheltenham side, who have improved, you know, no end since their change of manager. So a little bit of a contrast there, but still a good opportunity for Oxford to make it into the playoffs.
What about Cheltenham then, Adrian? Beaten at home by fellow strugglers Charlton in the week. No wins in 4 after 3 on the bounce. They're up and down.
Yeah, they're a bit up and down. I think they just decided to go toe-to-toe with Charlton and it didn't. They came out on the wrong side of it, really. It was, they're a lot more confident than they were earlier on in the season. They're hardworking. I think Darryl Clark's quite happy with his players, happy with the direction of travel. It's just a quality issue, in my opinion. They don't have players of the same level as Oxford and the leading lights in League One. There's quite a big gap, I would suggest, in terms of the talent pool. And their away form isn't good. They've only scored 10 goals away from home all season. And they've got the second worst record in terms of points gained on the road. Only 1 point away to top 10 opponents all season, Cheltenham. So if they are going to get a result at the Kassam, it will buck a trend. So yeah, I think this is a good opportunity for Oxford to get themselves back into the playoffs, because Cheltenham is, as well as the players are responding to Darryl Clark, there's a gulf there.
ill Buckingham a trend, you might say. Sorry. All about the battle at the bottom in League Two as Sutton United host Grimsby Town. Sutton, bottom of the pile, the Mariners 21st, 8 points better off than their host. Sam, you pointed me in the direction of Steve Morrison's cringy interview with BBC London a few weeks ago. I listened to it yesterday. Goodness me. Either the pressure's getting to him or he's just not a great guy, which I don't
What's cringe? What was cringe about it?
I mean, we'd be here all day. I'll say
yeah, go and listen to it, Clarky. They ran a story on it on TalkSport yesterday, actually. They did it on Simon Jordan and Jim White. They played it and went over it, actually.
The nicest thing that he said was, these questions are weird and I don't understand them. And it got worse from there, basically. It was not very well handled. Since that, Sam, they won at Notts, but still, I mean, they're a long way from safety, aren't they, relatively, given the form they've been in? They've only won five games all season.
Yeah, I did think in the aftermath for that interview, if it may gather pace, you know, as it so often does these days, and people, you know, would all have their say on it, and the pressure would maybe grow on Steve Morrison, you know, because of that incident. But it seemed to have been able to get beyond that. They got the really good win at Notts County. I think that was the first win, wasn't it, under his tenure. I think he's trying to play a little bit more football. Obviously they've been a 4-4-2 and very successfully so under Matt Gray. So the shapes have varied. He seems to be going with Clarkey's favourite this afternoon, or 3-4-1-2, I think he's gone with. He's had the dual strikers up there. They're certainly having a little bit more possession in the games where you'd anticipate them to have less. Even at Notts County, they seem to play a little bit. And he's getting some younger players involved last couple of games. I don't know if that's with a view to next season, but this is obviously a colossal game now. Having lost at Tranmere and not really doing themselves justice up there, it looked like that goal was going to come for Tranmere. I think they'd spurned the penalty a few minutes before they got the winning goal. So, yeah, this is an enormous game, isn't it, to just drag Grimsby fully back into the mire. But it might be an appointment for longer term, Matt. We don't know. I think he probably got given that job with the realisation that, you know, it could be too tricky to get out of trouble. And that seems how it's proven right now, but still plenty of games to go.
Bit more media training needed for the gaffer, I would suggest. Grimsby, Clarkey, they just edging their way to safety. I mean, a win here would put them on 37 points, potentially, if FGR lose with a 10-point buffer between themselves and trouble. It's not spectacular, but it's solid, inch by inch, getting ever closer to securing their status for another year.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Artel's gone in there and he's solidified them a bit. I mean, they've conceded a lot of goals in certain matches this season. They've had fives and sixes, haven't they? It's been a little bit sort of madcap at times. But back-to-back clean sheets will sort of put them in a better frame of mind ahead of this visit. A win, and they're probably safe, aren't they? That's how they'll see it. They won 1-0 against Forest Green, didn't they, the other day? That was huge. Good goalless draw at Plough Lane against Wimbledon. They moved to 5-3-2, so he set his stall out. We're going to be a lot more solid than we were. But look, they have only won once all season on the road. Lots of good draws, but not many wins. So yeah, look, I think this would be a fairly dour game. Yeah, in terms of attacking threat, it's Danny Rose, isn't it? He's the main man up top. Gavin Holohan in midfield has been doing all right as well. But yeah, they'll either win here, but they won't take risks doing it. I think they'll take the point and run if that's what needs to be.
All right, some edgy games then this weekend. We're getting to that stage of the season, aren't we? Speaking of edgy affairs, let's do a quick quiz to finish. Before we get to that, though, another reminder from the offer from our friends at Quinbet, who enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, two very easy questions here, one each and then a tiebreaker, which we'll definitely need because you'll both get them right. Sam, who's the only player to have reached double figures for goals for Birmingham so far this season?
Double figures, yeah. It's got to be Stansfield.
Been around the world, and that was the answer that I found. Yeah, Jay Stansfield, 10 goals.
You doubted yourself there, didn't you?
But I'd thinking... some Dembele noise in my brain there.
I don't like it when Matt says we're definitely going to get it right, because you know we both clam up a bit on these quizzes.
I think Clark, you were inches away from giving the answer to your question a moment ago, so I'm expecting you to get this right. How many goals has Sammy Smodic scored for Blackburn this season?
I don't know the figure. Sam doesn't know it, he's shaking his head. I think he's breached 20.
All comps or league?
All comps.
Oh, all comps.
Yeah. Going against Newcastle the other day, didn't he?
38 games. He's got 3 assists. His minutes per goal are 1.28. His goals per 90 are 0.70.
I'm having a guess. I'm going to have to guess at 23.
Sam?
Wouldn't have a clue. I'd say 21.
26 goals.
Wow.
The boy's got pretty good, that, for a team that have been playing so badly. Right, Sam, that means you win, but I'm going to ask you both the tiebreaker anyway. Less pressure around it now, though, so you can just give me a guess rather than I was going to say you have to message me privately. What was the attendance at Mansfield versus MK Dons on Tuesday? Nearest wins.
Okay.
You want me to message you?
Yeah, go on then. Why not? Let's keep it official.
I don't have a clue how much that holds.
Mansfield. I think that's a decent crowd. Yeah.
No idea.
Sam's typing into the group. I've seen what Sam's gone for.
Defeats the point entirely.
I'm gonna go slightly less. So Sam's gone 9,500.
Don't go 9,499.
No. I'm gonna say 8,721.
There you go, both wrong. 7,414.
I didn't think it was that big. I just thought it was quite a big game, but it's not a big stadium, is it?
All right. Right, if you want to follow us on social media, it's at EFL What The on X and at What The EFL on TikTok and Instagram. As I say, leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. It all helps other people find the show and makes us feel good about ourselves as well. We'll be back with another pod next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Bye for now.